Welcome to Hers,
His, and Ours,
part of the Scheist Podcast Network. Hello, and welcome back to Hers, His, and Ours. While we're working on our brothers and sisters project still, we are also watching current-ish TV shows, and we added a couple of straight-to-streaming documentaries in the mix this week as well. We're talking Matthew Perry, A Hollywood Tragedy, Last Take, Rust and the Story of Helena, The Pit, Mid-Century Modern, and Dr. Odyssey. So grab a seat and join us for This Week on the Couch. The wall, breaking the fourth wall.
Can we do that on air, on recording?
Sure. Hey, you listening to this show right now. Welcome to His, Hers, and Ours. Hers, His, and Ours?
Hers, His, and Ours.
Yeah, I don't know what I said the first time.
I don't either.
I think I said His first, but Hers, His, and Ours. We gotta get more back in the rhythm so that I remember. All the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we still got a couple episodes of Brothers and Sisters to get through before we jump into releasing the next little batch. But we're going to keep doing This Week on the Couch to just stay fresh, keep the iron sharpened hot.
Toast buttered? Is that the symbol you just did?
This is sharpening of a blade.
Oh.
Or the spreading of...
Butter on toast?
Yeah, we're going to keep the bread buttered. I mean, that's how the bread is buttered.
Okay.
Is some kind of saying. I don't know what it means. Something about money.
All right.
I know where my bread is buttered. Anyway.
Not that kind of show. Let's go.
It's not... Oh. Yeah, this is where we just talk about the things that we watch during the week, current shows, other TV things that aren't the main project. So I think we moved over a couple of things that I think are technically feature length because they're an hour, but they're basically docuseries that were singular episodes.
Yeah, I think one was like an hour and a half-ish, but was it still a one and done. Yeah.
I mean, that's a movie, but we watched it on streaming and it was straight to streaming. So
yeah.
We did watch it on our couch, so I think
it counts.
Fair enough. Yeah, you want to start with the Last Take, Rust and the Story of Helena?
Yes, that one was the one that was an hour?
I don't know. You watched it and then you made me watch it with you a second time.
Yeah. So I was curious. I feel like it was such a tragic incident. And while, of course, like our media does, they kind of highlight and focus on the wrong things. And I feel like the only topic of conversation or the primary topic of conversation was just the Alec Baldwin and his trial. But there was so much more going on. And I think Helena, who is the primary victim of this tragic accident, didn't get talked about enough through the like real-time action of all of this happening. And so I was just pleasantly surprised to see her husband asked her friend, who's also a cinematographer, to do this, you know, biography, I guess, documentary on her to showcase her work and who she was as a person and the events leading up to it. It does cover some of the trial stuff. I think I was very adamant in that while I understand there were a lot of people at fault, I would say, that led to this, I didn't like Alec Baldwin trying to not take any accountability, and I don't necessarily blame him just because he was the one holding the gun. there were safety measures not put in place. There were checks not put in place, which was not his fault. And I agree with that, but it still very much is kind of, I don't know what you want to call it. The theme in Hollywood around the higher level Hollywood celebrities or just bigwigs, I guess you can say, that don't end up having consequences. And that's not to say he's not mentally and emotionally paying for this for probably the rest of his life. But given what we saw, the armor and the, what was the other guy's title? I can't remember.
I think he was second AD.
I think he was second AD, but also responsible second for AD? Safety.
Yeah. Well, he was like sort of the manager of like the whole operation behind the director.
I think
it was second AD.
Yeah. So while they did get a fair punishment to the best of like what they could get for this scenario, and by all means, I do not think like Alec Baldwin should have gone to jail for this, but it was his production and it was, you know, like he was funding this.
He was a producer, yeah.
And I just feel like he should have taken some kind of accountability. Again, maybe the guilt and just the pain of that's going to live with him forever. And that's how he's going to kind of have to, what he's going to have to kind of deal with. But I feel like Helena, and especially the director who survived this incident, I don't know, I just feel like they kind of deserved a little bit more.
And more than this documentary gave, or more than they got to begin with?
I think both, because I know the film ended up getting finished, which I have a lot of mixed feelings about as well. Not my decision, I know, but I understand why her family wanted it made to showcase her work. And maybe that's enough for them to be able to honor her. But I feel like as an industry as a whole, learning that no one else put any additional safety measures in place or rules and guidelines for production sets other than the state of California, I think is a disservice.
They weren't in California though, were they?
They weren't, but California still saw what happened and put other safety measures in place. They filmed in New Mexico?
Sounds right.
Yeah, Santa Fe. But California still at least took the initiative to put additional kind of laws or guidelines into place for production sets to hopefully help prevent an accident like this happening again. And a lot of filming happens in California, but there's no other kind of like system-wide rules and regulations in place because of this. And that's where I feel like the people who did wrong didn't learn lessons here. If that makes sense.
Yeah, well, interesting you mentioned that. I saw an clip of an interview recently with Adam Scott from Severance. I think he was interviewing Rob Lowe. I don't know whose show it was, but Rob Lowe was basically saying like, oh, because of all the shit that's happened, like the people in charge of California should be sued and fired and you need to bring production back to California. And he was like, oh yeah, if we made Parks and Rec or Community or whatever the show was, now you'd be filming in Budapest. And he's like, nothing films in LA. And it's like, that's not true. That's not true at all. So much stuff still films here because the studio lots are here.
Well, not only that, they're making an abandoned theater and parking lot down the street from us into an entire set.
Yeah. They're literally filming down the street from us right now. Yeah. So the idea that there's no filming happening is just not true. I don't know why Rob Lowe is saying that unless it's harder for, it's more expensive. There's more regulations. You know, it's harder to film here for sure. And it's cheaper to go to another country and do it. It was probably cheaper to film Rust in Santa Fe. And they were on a tight budget. It's a small project. Like, all that stuff makes sense.
Right.
But
I agree. I think, though, like, the guidelines around safety and just kind of protection for crew and cast and everyone behind and in front of the camera should be in place regardless of where the filming takes place.
Yeah, And there's people that were on the crew, the camera team, had raised safety questions before the incident happened, and they had left the project before that happened. So it's the kind of the writing was on the wall if you're willing to look hard enough. But I think in a situation where there's like a lot of people working together on a passion project trying to make the movie happen, you know, a lot of that stuff is probably going unseen. And I think the person sort of somewhere up the food chain who split the duties of the armorer into two different jobs
should also be responsible.
Should be more responsible than some of the other people that maybe were involved, where the armorer obviously did the wrong thing, didn't do their job well, ended up going to jail and sort of taking the majority of the brunt fall. Of the fall for this. The second AD also, I think, either served jail time or was on probation or house arrest for like 18 months. And Alec Baldwin was not acquitted. He got off
on a technicality
because of the lawyers. They hinged in on one thing and got the case dismissed with prejudice, so it cannot be tried again against him. And yeah,
that's slimy to me, though.
It is. And I think that's the ugliest part of it, because like you said, it doesn't feel like he's the person to blame for this. And he probably shouldn't have gone to jail for what happened.
No, I don't think so.
But to not even have the trial come to completion because his lawyers were just paid well enough to find the loophole and to drop the charges or to just get the case dismissed. And to have him go on, was it Barbara Walters or one of those other sit-down interview shows and just saying like, oh, I don't feel guilty about it at all, is weird. But like, you know, we talked about when we were watching it, it may be a thing where if he was already consulting lawyers at that point, which he probably was, they probably told him, like, you can under no circumstances admit guilt of any kind because it will be bad for the trial that you are going to have. So, I mean, if it was my lawyers, would just been like, no, don't even do, you know, if I was his lawyer, be like, do not go on Barbara Walters and have this conversation at all. But you know, I think that's what makes it yucky, because in the case of an accident, like how do you serve justice there?
Exactly.
Right. And there is documented paper trail of people up the food chain in the producer world that worked on that movie that seemed to play very fast and loose with the safety, ignored safety concerns, and continued to push on anyway, despite very apparent problems. And those people didn't end up being the ones who took the fall for this.
Yeah, because I think the other slimy thing, while again, I understand from a grand scheme of things, is that OSHA just settled by doing a fine with them. And like, if OSHA's just going to settle things with fines, how is that helping protect the people that are employees, let's call them, in workplaces? That, like, the whole point of OSHA is workplace safety, regardless of what kind of job it is. So if OSHA is just going to settle by taking money, that's not changing or protect or adding any extra protections for the people in the environment.
It's true. And it was such like a high profile thing, too, that it's, you know, the production company or whoever gets the slap on the wrist, the movie ends up getting made again. The biggest star involved in the project doesn't face any sort of legal ramifications. The lowest person on the totem pole goes to jail.
It's like cliche Hollywood industry, any other big kind of corporate, high paid person. If you've got the money, you don't suffer consequences kind of story.
I mean, I do think the armorer is the person probably most directly responsible for the accident happening. Like, it's literally that person's job to not bring live ammunition to the set.
Agreed.
It's that person's job to make sure all of the ammo on set is not live. I also think that it is the people that ignored the safety conditions above that person. And I guess that includes the second AD in that case. And those people probably should have been responsible. Like, Alec Baldwin probably would have got off had it gone to a jury trial because he's Alec Baldwin. You know, like him sitting in front of a jury, like explaining the situation, his lawyers, like even if they don't get it dismissed on a technicality, it's really hard to find him guilty in that situation.
Depending on what the charge would be.
Yeah. I mean, best case scenario, what, like involuntary manslaughter?
Yeah. I mean, even though
it wasn't murder one or two. It wasn't like aggravated assault. It wasn't assault with a deadly weapon.
Yeah, but it's similar to like, isn't it involuntary manslaughter if you kill someone in a car accident?
If you're drinking.
But what if you're not drinking?
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer.
Okay. Well, maybe we need to get a lawyer involved. But I just think that, yeah, I mean, I'm glad that they made this documentary because I feel like, and I paid attention to this story when it had come out because it was very close to another accident on set happening that I was aware of. Different scenario, but similar in the same, and as far as the safety concern goes, that did happen here in California. So I paid attention to this, and I feel like a lot of that information around Helena herself was buried because, again, like every other incident, you don't hear about the victim, you only hear about everything else.
Well, from the outside looking into the average person, it became the Alec Baldwin trial, not
exactly,
you know,
Helena Hutchinson.
Yeah, say not her, paying attention to who actually lost their life.
Yeah, and honestly, I think still, like, the higher-up producers and the production should have been responsible because they cut corners, which led to safety concerns. And the armor having two different jobs and getting paid more for one versus the other, that's insanity that was allowed. I get being a low-budget film, but you can't skimp on the safety.
Yeah, well, when they did the final report, what did they say? That there was like a dozen live rounds circulating?
I think it was like 8 to 12 out of hundreds.
Yeah.
But then, you know, the whole cast is shooting every day, all day. And that could have gone, it could have happened to anyone, even just during practice time.
Yeah. So I think that's the bigger concern in that situation is like who was responsible for letting this happen. You know, they hired an armorer who was less experienced, who was just available because the other person that they wanted like wasn't available to do that shoot. So a lot of things had to add up for this like very unfortunate and tragic accident to happen.
Very sad. And I think I'll be interested to see if this ever gets released here because it's only been released internationally.
What?
Rust.
Oh, well, we watched it on Hulu.
The movie itself?
Oh, no. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be a market for it here.
Yeah, they only did the screening in, what was it, Germany or?
Helsinki, maybe?
Something like that.
It was somewhere, it was from Helena's, like, hometown
area. Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's been long enough. I think probably the majority of people, if they haven't watched this documentary, will have probably forgotten about it. So maybe they wouldn't make the connection, but it would be interesting. It would be interesting to see or hear if they ever try or think that they should do that, release it here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, well, that was one of two documentaries that we watched. That was the one that was 90 minutes. The other one was
an hour.
Yeah, the Matthew Perry Hollywood tragedy.
Oh, Matthew Perry.
Yeah, it was even more sad than just like the circumstances that we already knew. It's like we knew that he died in his hot tub. We knew that ketamine was involved, and then to really see the depths at which him even having the ketamine was very much, I think, illegal based on what we saw.
Well, I knew about the doctor's component and their role in it, and I knew because I followed the case, obviously, of when everything had happened and that there were arrests made and it was suspicious, and they kind of figured that out fairly quickly considering they were going to try and kind of chalk it up to not something being suspicious. I think what was most disturbing was how calculated and malicious on the doctor side of things it was that they preyed on him and went after him and took advantage of him with those text messages. That made me very sick.
Yeah, it was really gross behavior. And then also, like, his assistant was involved somehow. Like, a longtime assistant, too, lived on the property with him. So probably someone that he considered a friend. And it just seems a little suspicious that, you know, you would, the terminology is a little weird, but like, I think they said like mega dose or something like that when he gave him the extra ketamine before getting into the hot tub or while he was in the hot tub and then left to run errands, comes back and finds him dead.
Because that seems suspicious to me, too. Like, if you're going to give him an extra dose and then let him sit in a hot tub, why are you leaving the house?
Yeah, even if you're not under the influence of drugs or alcohol, being in the hot tub for an extended period of time, like, you might just black out and faint. So it seems a little weird to not have, like, any kind of precaution there. But he, I think, was either arrested or he plea bargained. The doctors, I know, went to trial. One of the doctors pled guilty. The other one, I think, went to trial. But the police were very invested in finding the drug ring that made it happen. The ketamine queen was like this whole other like true crime wrinkle that I didn't see coming. Basically, someone living like, I'm not going to name it, but someone living in like our neighborhood was apparently like a very well-known
drug dealer.
Very well-known drug dealer who lived a very big flamboyant lifestyle. And the idea was, I don't know if it was like two birds, one stone coming from the DA's office, because there was another case where somebody died from drugs that were provided from her. And so it could have been like, hey, if we can pin this death on him getting the narcotics illegally from her, we can also get her along with these two doctors. I don't remember if she was found guilty or not. I don't know if the documentary ever got that far.
I don't think all of the trials have actually taken place.
You're right. There was disclaimers on the screen throughout the episode saying, this is an active investigation, so some of the information that we're releasing is just what we know to this point.
Yeah. I'll be interested to see when those trials start how public it's going to be. I'm hoping it's pretty public, but I mean, this is also a very high profile when you're talking about Matthew Perry in general, so I'm curious, like, how do they get a jury that's not biased?
Yeah, and I mean, what makes it more sad is, like, all the shit that he had gone through, like, he had sort of gotten to the point where he was sober. He had helped other people get sober. We hear the testimony of like how good of a friend he was to other people in their addiction struggles. And it's like just sad to see how much he was still in it himself. And, you know, once he switched to ketamine, like ketamine was just the new addiction and it wasn't destructive in the ways that the other ones were, but it came at a cost. Nonetheless, they said they were selling him like individual vials for like $2,000 each.
Whoever got him started with that, because there are ketamine treatments for anxiety and depression.
Yeah, it is a legitimate treatment.
Yeah, but like the doctor explained, who is in a ketamine therapy, you know, treatment facility, is it's very, very, very monitored. It's very regiment based. It's not like, here's a bottle, do it at home. Yeah. And I think whoever started that, he probably didn't know. Or maybe it was earlier on. And it's sad because if it was helping from a depression and anxiety standpoint, but then it went too far and the doctors just pushed that along, that was not necessary.
Yeah, you know, he had battled these demons very publicly for a long time, to the point where even when, you know, they finally did the Friends reunion, like, he was always the thing standing in the way of the reunion happening.
Yeah.
And so they finally did it, and it was like everybody was finally excited to, like, see him and to know that he was doing better, and he had just released his book talking about his struggles with addiction and the pain it took of like trying to fill this void with money and celebrity and drugs and alcohol and whatever. And so he was like doing the book tour, trying to like legitimately help other people that were struggling, and to see that like he had finally maybe found some peace and some purpose outside of acting, and then
got taken advantage of
by some shitty predatory doctors, and you know, ends up dying in his hot tub. It's horrible.
So sad.
It's a very sad.
I think that was like that was the one celebrity death that got me. Like, everyone is always like, you don't know them, but it's like being the Friends fanatic that I am, I feel like I grew up with the Friends cast in so many different ways, and of all celebrities, and there's been a lot that have been disappointing and sad and like make me feel things, but Matthew Perry still hits pretty hard, especially with this information.
Yeah. I had just gotten you the book like fairly close to, it was before, but definitely close to when he passed.
And I carried it with me on several trips. And then after he passed, I started to read it. But one of the first things in the book starts to talk about how he should be dead by now. And I was like, I can't do it. I had to put it down.
Yeah, it was like, my name is Matthew Perry. All my friends call me Matt. I should probably be dead by now.
Yeah, and I was like, can't. I can't. Got to wait on this one.
Yeah. It does have a very beautiful foreword by Lisa Kudrow, though. So.
We love you, Matthew Perry. Yeah.
Well, both of those documentaries we took on were
downers.
Big time downers.
Sorry.
Heavy hitters. But we did get back to regular TV, but we watched The Pitt, which is not much of an upper.
I know, I'm sorry.
We watched the third episode in a row of them being in the middle of this mass casualty event. And so it's like, okay, there's finally like maybe the dam broke and there's like some oxygen coming back in. We saw like a little bit of a sense of humor in this most recent episode, which is what, 14 or 13? 14.
I think it was 14, because I'm very worried about if 15 is really the finale. But remember, I was saying, like, the show has been good with, like, they punch you in the gut, then they give you a little bit of room to breathe, then they punch you back in the gut.
That was not the last few episodes, though. The last few episodes felt like I got put through, like, an emotional wood
meat
chipper.
Grinder.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like this episode gave us a little bit more of a like awe moment.
Yeah. It's like the event is winding down. Like they're beginning to go back to what is normal, but carrying the burden of all this. And you just showed the story. Was it on Kimmel or one of the, it was on some talk show, but Noah Wiley talking about his mom being a nurse for 20 years. Yeah. And after finally watching the most recent episode of the show or something, being able to talk about her experience in that field in a way with her son that she had never done for her life. Throughout her life raising the kids, like he's like, yeah, she would do this and then come home and like make us dinner and help us with our homework. And
they
like,
had no idea.
Yeah. No idea.
Yeah. Which is insane. And I think, you know, Noah Wiley has been very vocal about his passion and reason behind doing this show is to focus on first responders, because like I was saying when I made you start from the beginning with me, to get to these episodes was, this is one thing that kind of hit me on the second rewatch of, you know, we hear about mass shootings way more than we should, unfortunately, right?
Yeah.
But we never hear about this side of that spectrum when the healthcare workers, the hospital, the staff, like what the actual doctors, nurses, even just the janitors, like they focus on that in these episodes, which I think is very incredible. The people who like bring food, like the toll and the strain it puts on the entire system. We never hear about any of that during any of these kind of mass shooting casualty scenarios, which is really sad. Especially kind of to go back to like the industry stuff. Again, everyone's always so focused on the shooter and not the victims and the people like taking care of the victims. So for me, I applaud Noah Wiley even more than I already have through this whole show for really honing in on that, because that's an important side of things to pay attention to.
Yeah, I can't believe you watched this show twice.
you're telling me, I told you, like, it was rough. And I think especially because it was harder to rewatch it back to back. Because like I told you, there were some things that kind of get buried because each episode is so intense. And I had taken a break after I was in the hospital because it was slightly triggering being in the emergency room focus. So I didn't ever, like the first time I watched it, I didn't watch it as a whole. So it was a different experience the first time I was watching it, even though it was gut-wrenching for me and I cried pretty much every episode. It was more spaced out, and so I didn't think about like the larger impact and before other things got, you know, complicated and difficult for us. So yeah, rewatching it straight through in a short period of time was intense. Thank you for doing it, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a lot. I'm like, after those episodes, I'm like, I'm not usually the person that's like, oh, let me have a palate cleanser type of show or something, but
it's why I watch Friends after this.
Yeah, I get it.
But it's literally the best show on TV right now, I feel like.
I don't think I'm watching enough to say that, but I know it is a good show. I know when I'm watching like a really excellent show, and it is that. You know, so many shows I watch a few episodes and I'm like, eh, this ain't the sauce right here. So move on. But you know, when we did this show last time and we talked about all these TV shows, we didn't talk about my favorite palate cleanser right now, which I call Dr. Podicy, but it's really Dr. Odyssey. And I was like, oh, we should just do a whole show about Dr. Odyssey.
We could.
And I mean, we could, because it looks like it's not going to get picked up.
I mean, I hope it gets saved. I hope it gets saved. It just hasn't been picked up right away, which is not always a good thing, but it's not always a bad. So there's hope. It's Joshua Jackson. It would be very disappointing to bring him back to TV and then cancel him after one season.
Well, I was not looking forward to the show at all, despite the fact that we ran into Josh Jackson on our flight to New York.
Pacey.
Yeah, back whenever we went, September last year.
Yeah.
Which was just like weird. And you were ready for Dr. Odyssey at that point.
I was.
And I was like, boat, doctor, melodrama. I'm like, meh, I'm not really interested in that. And then we started watching it, and I love that show because it has a little bit of the medical drama, but it's really only used as like a thing to give the show pacing, if that makes sense. Like, you could have all those characters still in that environment and not have them be doctors, and I would still like it. I think the three of them are good. Like I told you yesterday, I think the three of them is the show.
Yeah.
So
they have really good chemistry.
Yeah. So them trying to like maybe the story that they've backed us into, I think, is a little problematic for like where the show goes. Cause like Don Johnson is featured on the poster. He's what I would say is a important character to the show, but he's not a main character to the show. It's really Josh Jackson, Philippa Sue, and Sean Teal. And, Sean Teal actually was on another show called The Corporation,
which I completely forgot about.
It was one season and it didn't work out, but I was like, I recognize this guy, I swear. And it turns out that that is the case. But the show's had a lot of really fun guest stars. You know, Gina Gershon has been on the show. We just saw Catherine Newton was on it last night. And it's like, it's a procedural, like a police procedural, in the sense that there's going to be a problem, there's going to be a resolution in the episode, right? So it's like, you know that whatever the medical drama is, it's going to be over. But the through line is really the three of those characters and their weird love triangle that they're in. But I was like, what makes the show work is the love triangle. If one of them is gone, I don't know that the back and forth with the two of them works. So I was like, this show, if it doesn't make it on ABC or whatever, should get picked up and be a cable show. And they really go full into it, because last night was Dr. Dilf and there was just like three, what they called themselves, the Vixens. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to have a four way with Josh Jackson. And I was like, that's the show right there. Him sort of being compelled to be the ship's doctor and be a good boy, and then being tantalized with three hot young women that want to sleep with him. Meanwhile, he's trying to like maybe have a relationship with Avery, and then she's also maybe trying to have a relationship with him, but then also with Tristan, but she really kind of loves both of them, and they love each other, and Tristan and Max go back and forth between being competitive and then being bros and then being competitors. And even the last shot in the episode that we watched was like the way it was set up. I was like, watch, he's about to come and join them on the couch and they're going to have a little Tristan sandwich. And what do they do? A little Tristan sandwich to close out the episode. I'm like, that's the show right there. It is the three of them. And they're very good together, but I don't know how you move beyond that. Because it's like, if you haven't watched the show, I don't want to like give away what the primary storyline is, but it's leading us down a path where I was like, well, that can't happen because then like the show just doesn't exist in that new capacity. So I'm like, it would basically either take one of the characters off of the show or it would change the show in a direction that is not quite ready to go yet.
This is a Ryan Murphy show, right?
Yeah, he's one of the creators.
Yeah, I feel like Ryan Murphy can kind of do whatever he wants.
It only has a 5.9 on IMDb, which is sad. Because it's like, it's super cheesy. Like, every week is like a different theme. It's like Cougars Week, Spring Break Week, Influencers Week, Plastic Surgery Week. So each week is like a new kind of examination of like a different subculture in that way. There was the duck hunt one, right? Where they're like hiding rubber duckies all over the boat. And so it is very much like a cookie cutter type of procedural in that way. But
I think that makes it fun though, because they can have fun with their guest stars that way.
Oh yeah, 100%. It does make the show fun. I think the show is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's way more fun and funnier than I expected it to be. But I think also the stakes are kind of low, where I don't feel like any of the medical drama is like super important, or it's not The Pit. Like the way that the medicine is presented is not The Pit. Like I think they still do their homework. They still basically go through a lot of like the similar testing. And I think the linguistics and the language of the medicine stuff is for the most part handled well. But like I said, almost all of the medical situations on the boat are resolved in the episode. So it's like, oh, this person is presenting with mystery thing. Let's figure out the mystery. And then once we figure it out, let's treat it. And then that person's fine. And that's kind of like every episode.
I mean, there's been a couple where it's like, when we get to port, you need to get off and be in the hospital kind of a thing. But yeah, because I think especially with the theme and the, you know, this guest stars pretty much changing from week to week, they don't want to keep them.
Yeah, but there is a similar sort of through line of PTSD for our lead doctor, which hasn't really been talked about that much. Like they even kind of made a joke out of it in the most recent episode, because it's like he survived COVID and he's very, very strict about his COVID protocols on the ship. And then he gets COVID in one of the episodes with one of the other passengers. And the whole thing is kind of like jaunty and cute. It's not really like an examination of his PTSD, you know?
Yeah, but I think it's also kind of not the show to now showcase PTSD. But
no, it's a show where like they call Odyssey like heaven or something like that. It's basically a place for people to go and be debaucherous, and you have handsome and beautiful people on both sides constantly being temptations for the people that we familiarize ourselves with as the crew. So to me, that's fine. And the 911 crossover episode was bullshit. It was bullshit. You know it. It was a total sales tactic to try to up the ratings, probably for Odyssey.
Yeah, because 911 wasn't the issue.
No, it ends, and then it's like, oh, this character, Angela Bassett's character, ends up at the Odyssey, and then she's just like a side character that's in the next episode of Dr. Odyssey.
I mean, I love Angela Bassett, and I love 911, so I wasn't upset by it, but yeah, it was like, you didn't need to watch 911.
No.
They called it a crossover event, which usually means like both TV show characters are on each episode, and they're very dependent on each other. This was not, but the tie-in was like, which you wouldn't know because you didn't watch the rest of this show of 911. there was a cruise ship storyline where they got stranded and there was a terrorist on it and they had to like deal with that and they almost died. So it was a PTSD thing for Angela Bassett's character. But it was just fun to have her on the ship. But yeah, I mean, that was a desperate attempt, I think, to help Dr. Odyssey. But I feel like it should have been more intertwined if they really wanted to help it.
Yeah, you should have done First Responders Week and had the entire fire station, the entire cast of 911 just be the guests on the Odyssey. And that's the show, because then you really get all the characters you love in a situation where they get to kind of chill. And they're not the emergency team there, so you get maybe a little back and forth between the two of them. That would have been a good one, especially after the LA fires. First Responders Week would have been a great crossover episode.
No, I agree. That would have been
That's
nice
free, Ryan Murphy, but it's too late now. I hope the show doesn't get canceled, though. If it does, let's bring it to Hulu for real.
On Hulu?
Yeah, let's make it a straight-to-streamer. You don't have to worry about the PG-ness of the show anymore. And you can get freakier than you've already gotten.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I still love it. It's Joshua Jackson.
Dr. Dingaling. Dr. Dilf.
And I still love Philippa?
Philippa Sue.
Philippa Sue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hamilton OG cast.
Yeah. Like I said, the three of them are great together. But speaking of Hulu, there is another direct-to-Hulu
comedy. Segue.
I know, right? Sometimes they're smooth as eggs. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're very bumpy. But that one.
That was smooth.
It was smooth. The other one I had the other day, I was talking about meat being in the middle. And I was like, speaking of meat. Yeah.
Okay.
Speaking of Hulu, we're talking about Mid-Century Modern.
Love.
Which you and I went to a taping of the second episode, I think. Yes. And then you went to
the finale.
And this is created by David Cohen and Max Muchnick,
creators of Will and Grace,
starring Nathan Lane, Matt Bomer, Nathan Lee Graham, and Linda Lavin, the late Linda Lavin, and Pamela Adlon hopped on to the show kind of like halfway through. I don't know, it was a little mixed because sadly Linda Lavin passed midway through the filming of the first season. And so I think some things got restructured and reordered in order to make it work. But comparatively, this is like a whole 2 points on the scale higher than Dr. Odyssey in terms of rating. So there's like a 7.7. Odyssey is a 5.9. So,
I mean, this has been number one on Hulu for a couple of weeks since it released. So that's good to hear, because I hope they get another season.
Yeah. Well, based on the tapings, I wasn't sure that I was going to enjoy the show overall, but I feel like the editing does a really good job of like getting the best out of each of the scenes that we saw taped.
Yeah.
And so we had watched the pilot episode when we went to see the taping of the other episode. So I'd already seen that one. Then the one that we watched get taped was the second episode. So after the first two, I'm like, okay, I'm already like, I'm familiar with this. And then they do start to hit their stride. And I feel like the characters become more at home and the actors begin to become more of their characters. And you begin to sort of understand like the humor that works for each of them.
Yeah.
And even though you wanted to watch the show for Matt Bomer, and I was like, I don't want to watch him just play like a bimbo, a himbo in this case, but he is good at it, but it hasn't leaned as heavily on that since maybe the first couple of episodes. Like, he's still a little ditzy because that's the person that he is in that friend group, but he's got more texture and more depth and substance than he did in those first couple.
Yeah. And I think like I was just excited for him to get this kind of a role, because he was coming off of doing such heavy roles where he was, you know, like, I love Matt Bomer because of White Collar, like kind of where he started on television. And he played a womanizing con man, right? So this is very different, where he did get some other roles, and he was in Magic Mike, right? So he did get some other TV roles that where he could play a gay or bisexual character, but they were very heavy roles, like American Horror Story. And then he did Travelers.
He was in Maestro. It's a Fellow Travelers.
I keep forgetting.
And then he did all of the Magic Mike movies.
Yeah, he did the Magic Mike movies. But, you know, coming off of American Horror Story and Fellow Travelers back to back, which is a very heavy, heavy storyline, I was excited for him to get to do something lighthearted, especially because, you know, like him as an actor and in the industry went through significant, you know, fellow actor friend deaths, Willie Garson being one of them that he did White Collar with. So it was more of a, okay, good. He gets to like relax and have fun and like lean into this. And yeah, he's a little ditzy, but he does it so well. And he gets to be that, you know, like fun, quirky, good looking gay character that as an actor, I was just excited for him to get to kind of play this role. And Nathan Lane is phenomenal, as is Nathan Lee Graham. So you couldn't have, and Linda Lavin, of course, but like the three of their dynamic, like their personalities, it makes sense for him to be the younger, hotter, kind of like ditzy one. Cause he's like, you know, I'm just hot and I get what I want kind of a thing.
Yeah, there's an episode where they all get COVID and he's making like DayQuil martinis for them.
So great.
And I think Nathan Lane looks at him. He's like, is it possible that you look even better while you're sick? And he's like, no, my cheeks are all flushed. And he's like, my bedhead makes it look like my hair is thicker than it actually really is.
Yeah.
So they are a lot of fun together, and
they are. It's a show that I will watch repeatedly for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, we binged all of it in like 2 days, basically.
Yeah. And I think like them together, I'm still kind of curious, like what was the actual plan for the show?
Yeah.
Because Linda Lavin passing was very sudden and unexpected. It wasn't like she had a terminal illness and they could plan for it. So kudos to the writers and the production team to shift very quickly, because they pretty much had to change the script in a month. And, you know, they had taken a break because of the fires with the timing. Cause the taping we went to was her last taping, which was crazy. And
that became episode two.
And that became episode two, which didn't really make sense timing wise, because then, remember, I got tickets for, I want to say it was maybe the end of, it was the end of January. They only had two or three episodes left to film. So it was either the end of January, or the first week of February, because they had taken the time off when LA was on fire. And then it kept getting postponed because another cast member was sick. They never said who. So by the time I was able to get my ticket rescheduled, it was actually the week of my birthday. So it was that second week of February. And then that was the finale. So they must have had more filmed and just changed the order of things to be able to finish out the story with Linda Lavin.
Yeah, because they introduced Pamela Adlon in episode three as Nathan Lane's sister that is in town. And then she's not around again until like episode eight. But
yeah,
it's like, it's kind of the story, the way that the story is would make it seem like she realistically should have been there for maybe like episodes three, four, and five.
Or,
and then gone.
Or she should have been there for episode six or seven, been there for eight, and then been consistent through the end of the season.
Yeah, which she wasn't.
But they wanted to introduce her earlier on. So when they brought her in to finish off the show when Linda Lavin was already gone, you know.
But she wasn't there for the like the post-mortem, the posthumous episodes for her. Yeah. It's like they mentioned that she was at the funeral, but there's no like funeral episode, despite the fact that the show starts at a funeral. Like the first scene in the show overall is at their friend's funeral.
Yeah, I'm curious if they must have done some reshooting, because remember that last episode we see before Linda Lavin is actually written out of the show, she's not interacting with any of them.
Yeah,
so I
she's
feel
on
like
a trip, and they introduced the love interest.
A love interest.
Her, yeah.
And my theory was that must have been part of another episode that they cut out to drag out the time of Linda Lavin's story to lead into then her not being there anymore, and then replaced it with some of the Pamela Adlon episodes potentially.
Yeah. I mean, I think you can tell that there is like a certain you can feel that it gets a little funky, but the episodes it's structured in a way where you don't know if the episode is the following day or the following week or the following month or if it's 6 months down the line. They're sort of like you can plug and play a lot of them without time restrictions.
Yeah. And I think like the only time we see a noticeable time jump is that last episode, they say four months later. And honestly, I think if we hadn't gone to a taping early on, I don't know that we would have even caught on to any of
probably not.
I don't think the average viewer is probably noticing this. We just are because of the order that we went, or you and I went to a taping and then I went to the finale taping, because the episode they showed us for the finale was also very much earlier in the season. Mm. So it was like we needed to know those storylines for the finale. It was the Fire Island weekend.
Gotcha.
That was like episode four. So I feel like maybe that would have been later in the season, but they had to like rearrange because that was an episode that Linda Lavin wasn't in.
Yeah. But the Fire Island one does come back later where some of the storylines from that connect
to the finale.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. That's why they showed us that episode.
Gotcha.
But I don't know that it would have naturally have been earlier on in the season. Yeah. So it doesn't matter. I love it.
It's good. It's
I'm going to rewatch it over and over and over again.
It's only like 4.5 hours long front to back.
Yeah. And like I told you, it makes me want to rewatch White Collar like right now.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to do that just yet. I mean, you can do whatever you want, of course. But
yeah,
we still got to catch up on White Lotus and Severance. We got to start Adolescence.
We do.
Yeah. There's a lot to catch up on TV wise. And then we'll jump into something else.
Okay.
And we have Brothers and Sisters to watch so we can get back to our Brothers and Sisters watch along.
Yep.
Yep. Yep.
But I highly recommend Midsummer Dream Modern.
Yeah. Surprise me.
Good. I'm glad. Yeah. It didn't surprise me. I knew it was gold.
Just it's very sitcom-y, which I've moved away from my sitcom habits. So
true. And I was a diehard Will and Grace fan, so I was not expecting to not like this, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I get it. But yeah, I enjoyed it.
Good. I'm glad.
Cool. All right. Well, we will reconvene once we've caught up on some of those other shows. And once we're probably the Brothers and Sisters one will be.
We'll do next.
Yeah. And then next week we'll be back on This Week on the Couch, catching up with Severance and White Lotus and Adolescence and all the hot shit.
Sounds good.
Yeah. We could also probably throw what's the military one that I stopped watching that we need to resume? Not Navy SEALs, but the one with Denise Richards and Cam Newton, Golden Tate.
Special Forces.
Special Forces.
Yeah, you didn't want to finish that yet with me.
Did you finish it?
No, I was waiting for
you. Well, there you go. We still got that to finish, too.
Yeah, there's only a couple episodes left, I think.
Okay, cool. Well, we got some stuff to work on. So I hope if you're looking for a new show, maybe one of these sparks your fancy, go watch Dr. Odyssey and save it. There was a two-part shark episode. Come on now.
With orcas, too.
That's right. Super orcas. Well, just crazy orcas, but okay.
All right.
Cool. Take care. We'll see you next week.
Bye. Bye. Thanks for listening to Hers, His, and Ours. We'd love for you to continue on this journey with us. The easiest way to do that is to like and subscribe to the show on the podcast platform of your choice. Follow our socials at Hers, His, Ours, spelled like time, on Instagram and X. To keep tabs on this show and others in the Scheist Podcast Network, follow at Scheist Podnet on Instagram, Blue Sky, and X.